Benjamin, you were airborne, I believe, a few days ago.
Yes, I've cut ties with terra firma. Mm-hmm. Things have changed for me.
An aviator.
I no longer am a man of the land.
Emperor of the skies.
I'm an emperor of the skies, indeed.
The partridge finally flies.
I've noticed with Ben, there's a new swagger.
Mm. Gravity holds no dominion.
Since you stopped being what you call us, is you call us crust crawlers. You've stopped being a crust crawler. And you've got this kind of buoyancy to you.
That's
which
right.
Which has affected your email style.
Yeah.
I don't know, just everything about you is more bombastic. There's triple exclamation marks on everything now.
And literally buoyant as well, making me wonder if the hot air balloonist filled you with hot air.
Oh, yeah, I'm funneling hot propane up my arse at all times. I've modernised the beam machine, so it now floats.
That's why you got a lot of sandbags tied to your waist this morning, is it?
Yes. And you've got sort of blue flames which come out of your eyes whenever you speak now, which is a little bit disconcerting, I'm going to say. the blue hot flame.
I think we should explain to the listener that I've been on a hot air balloon ride, and that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because we did a live show a few moons ago now in Bristol, and the topic that came out of the beam machine there was hot air balloons.
Yeah.
And at least half of the audience were experts in hot air balloons.
Yeah, it's quite a weird show, didn't it, where we just knew jack all about hot air balloons and really had no idea what to talk about. And then
because we're normally ahead of the audience, aren't we? That's one of the rules of comedy and stuff, isn't it? You're one step ahead.
Well, we tend not to be, though, because all of our listeners are kind of PhD-level educated people who seem to know a lot more about everything than we do.
That's true. So, because I've always thought of us as a high-status comedy troupe, but it could be actually they just see us as sort of... idiots. So an idiot troupe. And our audience are highly intellectual, highly cultured, cultivated, almost sort of slightly effete power mongers, you know, the people at the very, very top of society, and they see us as...
The Cardinal Richelieu types.
Exactly. Hmm. And what does that make us?
Well, we're basically three shaved and greased ferrets in a bag.
That's how they see us, isn't it? Is bring in the amusement ferrets before the actual fools. We're not actually even the fools.
No, because those guys are trained. Those guys are properly trained.
They're actually trained.
The shaved ferrets, it's all guesswork, isn't it?
Yeah, with shaved ferrets, you can't predict what a shaved ferret's going to do. It's Stanislavski's law of the shaved ferret, which is no matter how good a play is, if a cat comes on, everyone will look at the cat.
But a good way to get the cat off the stage is then to open a bag full of three shaved greased ferrets.
You won't see that cat for dust. And the audience, you'll get a standing ovation. I mean, almost guaranteed. The crowd will love it.
And thankfully, the play ends at that point because everyone just goes, right, there's no point carrying on with Miss Julie or whatever we're doing.
No. The three ferrets will then be celebrated in society when the next season those ferrets will
and
be.
And then there's the backlash against the ferrets, of course.
That's right.
The ferrets get cancelled. One of the ferrets runs for Reform UK. The other one does GB News. And third one. Maybe the clergy?
Probably it could be clergy, could be premature death.
Could be disappears for ages. Everyone thinks they've gone away. But actually, they've invented a new, really, a really amazing biscuit.
Yeah. Garibaldi too.
They said it couldn't be done.
No one saw it coming. But actually, just occasionally you'll get a ferret that can be big twice in two completely different fields. Mm.
This takes us a long way from the topic. But what do you think is the most recent new biscuit that's properly in the biscuit pantheon?
Are we including the sort of the dark chocolate wave of the noughties?
Well, I'm saying Wagon Wheel.
Wagon Wheel. But I mean, that's back in the like late 80s.
I'd say that's 70s or 80s, yeah.
That's the last innovation.
Is this an egregious tangent?
Well, no, I think what it is,
it's a stumper.
You've got three shaved ferrets and you're trying to get them to do Hamlet or something. I mean, it's just like, this isn't our wheelhouse, Ben. it's too targeted. It's too rational.
We've accumulated no knowledge. We are greased shaved ferrets.
We are greased shaved ferrets. I think we've opened the biscuit. We've opened this packet of biscuits. We've got to at least have a go at it. I mean, I'd say the most recent biscuit that's come on my radar, and we're talking like about 10 years ago, is Oreos, which I feel were like a new import. They never used to be able to get Oreos here.
But they feel very like 50s America to me.
Right, okay, so they're like a really retro...
Mommy, will they be able to eat Oreos on the moon when they get there?
I know what you mean, but they certainly weren't a feature of my childhood.
Of British life, no.
No, not my childhood.
But they are now ubiquitous.
But I think that they're utterly rubbish. They're terrible, don't you think?
I think you're right.
But is that because of your preset tastes? Has that biscuit come too late?
Oh, I see.
Is it too late because the biscuit centres of my brain are already completely encrusted?
Are fused.
You cannot introduce a new biscuit at this point.
It's actually quite dangerous.
It's actually really, really, really dangerous.
Well, I've got a similar thing, Henry, with Choco Leibniz, which I assume have been going since, you know, the days of the Napoleonic Wars.
Yes.
But they've only really been in British consciousness in the last 15 years, would you say?
No, 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 no. This is the problem, you see, because you didn't grow up in provincial England.
Ah.
Your Choco Leibniz has been around for a while to denote high status.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Aspiration, impress guests, you know, someone down the road. Maybe they've got a brand new Peugeot. You can't afford a Peugeot. You invite them over, get them some Choco Leibniz, okay?
Checkmate.
Yeah, we're still in the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leibniz are they're the diplomatic biscuits, aren't they?
They've power broker biscuits.
Well, Leibniz, of course, was a battle.
That's right.
Yeah. The Battle of Leibniz.
The Battle of Leibniz. And it was decided when the Austrians dropped a giant milk chocolate rectangle onto
the Ottomans.
In a move none of them could have seen coming.
None of them saw it coming.
It's not in the art of war. You won't find it in any of the manuals, any staff colleges across the world.
It's so difficult to get chocolate airborne, Mike. That's why the chocolates you get on airplanes are so tiny. It's one of the reasons. Because it doesn't maintain its integrity, does it? But high or low pressures. That's why it's almost entirely a sea level snack. But also, because on the chocolate Leibniz, the little bumps around the edge of the biscuit, each of those represents the head of an Ottoman general that was lopped off, wasn't it, at the denouement.
And their biography. Yeah, you can actually read those indentations if you...
That's right.
If you know what you're looking at.
You know what I didn't like about Oreos? Mm. An Oreo, to me, looks like it's had all the colour. The white of the creamy bit is too white.
And by the way, can we put creamy in heavy, heavy quotation
marks? I did
marks?
Actually do that. Yeah. I did that visually, yeah.
It sort of looks creamy.
I'll do the sonic equivalent, which is the white of the creamy. Methinks not. Bits.
Yeah, okay.
Lovely, yeah, did that do it?
Lovely and clear.
Perfect.
Available for voiceovers. the white of the cream bit is too white, and the black of the kind of chocolatey bit is too black. It's been completely desaturated. What it reminds me of is these scenes in Dune 2 that are shot in the kind of evil kingdom, the evil parts of Dune 2, with desaturated completely. There's no colour.
You can barely see the Oreos in those scenes, can you?
You can't see the Oreos in those scenes. Actually, a lot of the spaceships are just a shot of an Oreo. That's how they get those sleek lines, quite sort of strikingly simple designs.
I've just looked at when the wagon wheel was invented. Mm. It's 1948.
Is it really? Feels like a very luxurious snack for the post-war period. What were they doing with marshmallows in the post-war period?
And why did they market it with a kind of old West sort of... They've called it a wagon wheel. They didn't have to call it a wagon wheel, did they?
Maybe. I think Westerns were quite big news back then.
Yes.
So maybe anything cowboy was cool.
They originally called Western wagon wheels, and they were first invented in Australia.
Right.
Anyway, I need an answer from you, Mike.
Renew biscuits.
Yeah.
What is your go-to biscuit, Mike?
Custard cream. What I'd like to see as a new biscuit would be like a sort of the club sandwich equivalent of the custard cream.
I want tomato and ham in it and stuff like that.
Tomato and ham.
Some crisps on the side.
Yeah.
A dollop of Branston's.
Eaten poolside. I want another layer of custard cream.
Oh, yes. The kind of Big Mac of custard cream.
Exactly. I want a sort of triple-decker custard cream. Yeah. That's what I'm excited about.
The custard cream, that is not in a desaturated world. The cream... Mm-hmm. I'm still using the voice, but not as hard. Mm-hmm. The cream has a bit of yellow in it. It's got a bit of colour in it, hasn't it? It's not got this weirdly black and white desaturated thing. So it's still vaguely... You can look at custard cream, you can think of chickens, butter, milkmaids, a farmer... being stampeded by a load of hogs. Do you know what I mean? It's got
It feels human.
It feels human. It's in the human realm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they definitely feel very like Victorian to me. Like I could imagine Queen Victoria having a custard cream.
Yeah. It's an empire. It's a biscuit of empire.
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's a biscuit of power.
Hmm.
Yeah, as for new biscuits,
isn't a biscuit innovator. I mean, if you're a custard cream fan, you're backwards looking in your biscuit tastes.
I'm genuinely stumped. You'll occasionally see someone breaking, because they don't last, I think. I mean, normally you'll see someone breaking into the biscuit market with some chocolate bar brand will try and make a biscuit version of the thing. You know?
Oh, really? Like a Mars biscuit?
Like a Mars biscuit or a Galaxy biscuit or something like that. Oh. They tend not to last. They tend to be fleeting.
You know what I bought the other day? Occasionally, I think most people do this occasionally, is you're in a supermarket and you see a retro biscuit from your past and you go, maybe I can, I'm going to go on a trip down memory lane.
Never go back.
A sort of nostalgia purchase.
Never
go
back.
So I bought a pack of Blue Riband.
Okay.
Do you remember Blue Riband?
It's a lunchbox staple, of course. Yeah.
It's a lunchbox staple.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the vicar's coming around. Do get out the Blue Riband.
Yeah. And what does it mean? Does it mean like, is that a thing? It's a Blue Riband event. Is that a thing?
Yeah, Blue Riband means like top of the pops, isn't it?
Blue Riband. I was actually, the level of disappointment, I was actually angry. I finished the pack, but the last three I ate was with real anger. They were absolutely just, there was just nothing, there's just nothing to say about them.
You've allowed yourself too many treats in adult life. That's the trouble. If you'd taken austerity measures against yourself, then that would still be exciting. You'd still be taken places by the Blue Riband. But you're self-spoiled, so it means nothing to you.
But UK bakers have progressed. Chocolate technology's moved on. We can now talk. We can now casually have conversations where we refer to a quadra choc cookie.
Yeah, and it just trips off the tongue.
And no one bats an eyelid. Didn't they? But like they quadruple choc, because I think it was like late 90s. There was the talk of double choc cookies.
Yeah,
you take a cookie, you put twice as much choc in it.
Yeah.
Triple choc emerged at some point in the mid-noughties, I think. And then I think we've got quadra choc now, where the cookie is, it's got chocolate.
So hang on, so there's dark, there's milk, there's white, and the fourth is?
Quadra.
Quantum.
What do you think of the phenomenon of triple choc cookies? I mean, does it mean anything?
No, it just means chocolate.
I think it's just, I think that we have completed biscuits.
It's a good point.
We did so a long time ago. And I think there are people who try and say that we haven't completed, and there'll be quadro chocs, and there'll be, your Galaxy biscuit and all the rest of it. But the reality is we have completed biscuits.
We're just shifting around the same ingredients.
Yeah.
We're shifting we're rearranging the deck chairs on a delicious biscuit Titanic.
Exactly. That the history of biscuits is written.
Yeah. And it's sinking into a sea of, what, caramel?
Yeah, or a nice hot cup of tea.
And I think for Mike, even though, Henry, you had that experience, I think for Mike, top of the tree is the Blue Riband. The way that his eyes shone when you mentioned the Blue Riband.
He actually likes Blue Riband. Of course. Of course I do. It's a lunchbox staple, but not every day. It's like a Friday lunchbox. It's not, it's not like the start of the week. It's not a Monday.
You're sounding like a politician who's just got this line he's trotting out. Just keep saying it's a lunchbox staple. It'll get clipped up. It'll end up on TikTok.
Fairness, social justice, and lunchbox staples.
Get the message out. It's a lunchbox staple. That's what you're hearing on the doorstep. People want more lunchbox staples.
What people
staples.
Are talking about, what people are asking about is lunchbox staples.
But Mike, I have here the figures from the Office of Budget Responsibility that says that it is not a lunchbox staple.
In fact, if anything, it's draining the national lunchbox.
It's a Friday feeling. Okay, listen, it's not an end of termer. It's not a birthday. That's your wagon wheel. Absolutely, right? Okay.
Okay, yeah.
But on Friday, Blue Riband. Absolutely fine. No problem.
I think because it's got such a kind of, it's got such a pompous name and it's got the ritual of unwrapping it. It feels like, but what you're getting, it's almost less, it feels like it might be a sort of free biscuit somewhere. Do you know what I mean? It's got nothing, it doesn't feel like you should be exchanging any money for it at all. There's so little to it. It's got no flavour, very little texture. It's just a texture, actually. It's just
and
a
that's
crunch.
Why when the revolution comes, you will be first against the wall, my friend.
Do you remember there was a period, I don't know if it's still going, I feel like there was a phase where supermarkets were selling big, slightly soft cookies in a bag.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Still do. That you sensed they'd sort of made on site. There was these were vaguely sort of fresh cookies or something.
It's still a thing, I think, yeah.
They were big and soft, the chocolate bled everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes. And they were in a bag that was so greasy you could basically see through it.
Yeah, they were great.
Yeah. Yeah. Are they still going?
I think so, yeah.
Definitely, yeah. I associate them quite strongly with the late 90s.
Same.
Which was when... Do you remember there was the success of a business called Ben's Cookies?
Vaguely, yeah.
They have incredibly small they've got a kind of rental square footage strategy for their business, whereby they try and sell as many cookies from the smallest possible units.
From a kind of meter square unit, yeah.
Yeah, they've always got like a meter square unit with a very, very hot person inside and a huge queue of tourists.
Yeah.
So they've got a tiny one at Covent Garden.
Yes.
And they've got a tiny one on Oxford Street. So they do still exist, but they're in tiny little units.
Anyway, well, I saw one recently. I was in Lille. I went, for the second time in my life, I went to Lille. It continues
to be
a slightly strange place. Yeah.
Give it a second chance. Good view.
Anyway, I was walking around Lille and I was looking for, because it was my last day on holiday, I was about to get the train to London and I thought, I want to get some classic French pastry. Like, I'm going to just eat pastry until I can't walk before I arrive back in Britain, right?
Lovely.
So I was looking for a boulangerie, patisserie, whatever. And the biggest queue outside any shop in the whole of Lille was a Ben's Cookies.
Well, I don't know how they do it, Ben.
It's like, what? You're surrounded by these lovely bakeries making lovely stuff.
Mm. By the way, it's possible that they've got a small square footage policy, and also they could be, because they hardly employ any staff because there's not enough room for staff in their tiny little units they have. It could be that they're using Q
stooges
psychology. So the Q stooges.
Cuges.
Q stooges.
They're all under the employ.
Cuges.
Of the elusive Ben.
They're all on the payroll.
It's a good theory.
Because obviously that when you see a queue, you get in the queue, don't you? I mean, that's simple. Yeah. That's basic. People get in queues. Yeah, I've got a food stall market near me. And so every lunch it opens up, there's different food stalls. You know the ones like they have a giant wok? It's the only place really in life that you see a giant wok.
They'll have a sort of mega paella as well.
There'll be a mega paella on the go. And there'll be various mega paellas and giant stir fries and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's one that does falafel. There's a couple that do falafels. Mm. So I went down there once for lunch, and there was two falafels. So one falafel place had a huge queue. Oh God, that looks good. Something about that falafel place really appeals to me. It's because it had a huge queue. Walked along a bit further, and there was a falafel place which just had no one at it. And I was like, this falafel place disgusts me.
But also, the second one, there was a big mega wok being stirred by a dog, wasn't there?
It was. And it was the fact that the dogs were front of house. That was what was bothering me about the business. I don't mind if dogs are doing stuff in the back. They're very faithful animals, man's best friend. They're trainable.
You don't want to see it.
They're cute. They're lovely. But not front of house, not customer facing, please.
You've got very poor hand washing, though, haven't they?
Well, they haven't got hands.
The only other ones I don't like to see working in kitchens is mice, because they have zero cloacal continence, which I think rules them out of being in any sort of catering situation, please, for me.
I've got strawberries growing outside my house, which I planted.
Well done.
And they're being eaten by mice.
Oh.
And they wait until they're perfectly ripe.
This is getting more and more cute by the second.
And then eat it.
These little mice, they're going out and testing it.
Henry, they're not testing it. They're ruining my garden. Okay. Every day I go, oh, I wonder if any of the strawberries have ripened. And then, oh yes, one has. And then it's got these horrible little rodent bites. It's not sweet, Henry.
That's quite sweet. That is quite sweet. A little mouse eating your strawberries. It seems so wholesome. I'm sorry to hear that.
What if you imagine it's a rat? Because it might be a rat.
Then it's horrific.
Or a beaver.
Then it's utterly horrific. Beaver, beaver's all right.
Or a neighbour.
Or it could be a neighbour.
Neighbour, I don't mind.
My partner thought it was a local child.
On their knees, gnawing away at your strawberries. It's a horror show.
Ben, are you going to do one of these things that happens to men at a certain point in life? I don't think you're at that point, but which is you decide to make this a crusade which will dominate the next 10 years of your life. It's you versus the mice.
What, leading to an appearance on BBC Breakfast.
In a reckless search for meaning and purpose.
Yeah, you'll be interviewed on BBC Breakfast about the razor wire, the mini CCTV cameras that you've got.
Well, I just had a sort of dwindling sense of relevance, really. It did wonders for my libido.
And eventually there's a restorative justice thing, isn't there, where you're introduced to the mice to actually have a sit down and have a conversation with them.
Yeah. Very moving documentary.
And I then hit them with a mallet.
You hit them with a mallet, and the producer's like, Ben, we set this up, it costs quite a lot of money, this we now have to put this up post watershed because it's so disturbing. So you've basically completely severed your relationship with BBC Breakfast, Ben. You'll never be working with them again. And they did see it as working with, actually, not for. They saw it as you together.
As we were saying.
So I haven't finished quickly yet. Which
okay,
is,
of course. Yeah.
This is Flaffelstall.
Yeah, never mind a story about someone who's been on a hot air balloon for the first time in their life. Let's hear about Flaffelstall. Yeah, well judged.
Mike, just wait till you hear how it ends, Mike. Remember this moment in the conversation, then wait till, when you hear how it ends, then we'll reassess it, okay?
Okay.
Just you wait. Anyway, one thing led to another. I had this, what happens to anyone, a lot of people, in a food court situation or one of these things which is you just can't choose and you get in a real muddle about what to do. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Quite tense, isn't it? I mean, the fact is, balloons are fairly safe now. There's not that much tension in a balloon story. And it's not universally relatable. Everyone
especially
has
if it's been told by a survivor. I mean, come
exactly.
on.
Where's the jeopardy? So I couldn't decide where to eat. I went back to the first falafel stall. It was packing up. It was too late. So I went back to the falafel stall that had no queue. And for some, I'm in the mood for a falafel now. I think the guys were saying, it's also another place where they call out to you, go, come on, try the... I waved and I went, all right, fine. I went to the non-queue falafel stall. He made me my everything I was looking at in the salad, I was judging because there hadn't been a queue. I was going, that cabbage doesn't look, there's something wrong about that cabbage. The way he sliced it, it's not the right density, it's not the right thickness. Then he did a thing which was really unappetizing, which he went, do you want some more falafels? I'll just chuck them in. Don't do that. You're devaluing the concept. All right, yes. But it's a very delicate psychological game, this, and you're really, really messing it up. Do you know what I mean? There's no subtlety here.
These are for the bin sale method.
Exactly. It's your face or the bin, sir. It's your face or the bin. You choose. Oh, I'm hanging them over the bin. Oh, it's going to be too late.
Do you consider your own body to be a bin? In which case, you can have these falafels, but I'll also have to throw some of these polystyrene containers in there as well. But it's up to you. You will get free falafels.
And this grimy old yogurt pot. Do I put it in the recycling or in your mouth, sir? I always get mixed up. It's got yogurt on it. Anyway, and I thought, I ate the meal resentfully. I thought, this isn't a really cool London falafel. The other stall had a queue. You know what I mean? This isn't like... A few weeks later, I went back to the same food place. The initial falafel stall that had the queue had no one at it. And the one I ended up going to had a huge queue. What are you going to do? There's no way. I don't know what to think now. What the hell? What? It was queue dynamic. All of it was queue psychology, queue dynamic. And actually, over the course of a day, certain places will develop a queue because other people are in it. And then it'll get bigger because people are seeing it. And then, half an hour later, that might change around again. It's a fascinating area.
Absolutely fascinating.
I know this might seem awful. Can we boot the balloon story to next week?
And you're right, that story about you getting a falafel was vital.
But listen, okay. But okay, here's
we've made the editorial decision in the script meeting ahead of the recording. We decided that actually, yeah, this is top draw. This is number
one. If you're feeling a bit disappointed, like Pam sounds like she is, the thing I would encourage you to do is imagine the look on my face when I saw that initial falafel. didn't thank you. And that's it. You've got to imagine my face at that point.
Yeah, it's I'm imagining the face. I'm imagining is sort of pretty much expressionless and inscrutable at the moment.
Inscrutable. Just
you're walking on your own in the street. I'm assuming.
I'm just yeah. Well,
or did you go big? Did you?
All right. Imagine the look gurning? Inside. Imagine the look inside my face.
Okay. Ooh.
Oh. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
And then I walk a little bit further, and I see that the one that I went to initially does have a huge queue. I mean, suddenly, my face is...
Oh, we're going over the same thing again, are we?
No, but this time you're imagining the look on the inside of my face.
Right, okay.
But I feel like an absolute merry fool. I am old, but I am happy. I was once like you are now.
I didn't understand Flafflecue dynamics. I have a story to tell you, my child, about the time I went to a food market and there were two falafels. Believe me, but only one of them had a cue. I was such a funny fool. I thought that one must be the better one, but the falafels were ultimately quite similar.
Also, in the end, aren't falafels just a little bit too dry in general? Why is nobody saying this? Why do people seem to like it so much?
Maybe you wouldn't have to offer hummus with it if the falafel to start with wasn't a dry snack. What the hell is going on now? He's putting on tahini.
And where do those purple pickle squared off pickle things actually come from?
What are they?
Turnips.
Are they turnips?
It's turnips.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Are they?
Yeah.
Goodness gracious me.
Lovely turnips. I'm a big falafel fan, actually. Right, come on, let's move on.
Okay, let's turn on the bean machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Benjamin from Cardiff, is my hot air balloon ride.
Okay, literally, what are the chances that is? Who is this Benjamin? Tell us more about him.
I don't know. It's just what's come up?
Well, that's incredible. God, well done for gaming the system there, Ben. You're good.
When you are the beam machine.
Yeah, it does come with certain privileges.
Yeah, it's mainly downsides.
Great move, by the way. Great move. I'm delighted.
Yeah, that's
about
a real checkmate.
It's a bit like, isn't it? Though it's a bit like a kind of constitutional move.
Yes.
Like the king could overrule Parliament, but never does.
It's being a brilliant political operator, Ben. Yeah. Well, which is what you've always been within
it's not
the, within
being
the bean
legislated
machine
against, hasn't it?
No.
It's not in when the bean constitution was written. No one assumed that anything like this would ever happen.
Well, nobody knew that falafel. Yeah. The sheer gravity of that falafel story. Yeah.
And Ben, I can see now you've prorogued Mike, haven't you? That's why he's wearing that shirt. You prorogued him, didn't you? Because yes. You knew this could happen.
Black Rod is on his way, Mike.
Black Rod is on his way. So the only thing I can do now, the only options I've got is
a coup.
Is a coup.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, I'd need the support of at least two of the other beans.
You could involve the Lib Dems.
Well, I've already reached out to the Lib Dems on WhatsApp while we're having this conversation. They're interested.
Okay. They're always game.
Ed Davies asking what the optics will be if he comes round right now with a canoe and pretends he's crashed into my kitchen.
You could fully succeed, of course, from declare yourself independent. An independent bean.
That's right. So I'd have to start the mono bean, Henry's mono bean club,
mm-hmm.
which I've got prepared, it's ready to launch. I've got the logo.
Well, or of course you could try and institute some kind of owl fuckers takeover.
Mm.
The trouble is owl fuckers has now become so big. It's one of those. I know. I generally don't mention it on the podcast because I know it's not very cool for me to do that. But it's
almost like a state in itself, isn't it?
It's so big now, guys. I'm sorry.
And like I think the listeners can tell that normally when you're recording this podcast, you are backstage at the O2 or maybe Wembley Stadium.
Exactly. That's why you'll occasionally hear me shouting something like, "More crisps, Eamon! More crisps!" No, so, it's so big now that what's happened is I now essentially, obviously I co-owned it with Gabby Rosin and Eamon Holmes, but what's happened now is we've been bought out.
Pauline Quirk.
We've been it's a cabal of the three most powerful people in Britain: Pauline Quirk, Gary Lineker, and Dave Lineker. He's Gary Lineker's best friend.
No, really. He's got a best friend called Dave Lineker.
It's an incredible coincidence. It's an incredible coincidence. Basically, I've sold my shares. I now work for Alphacus rather than, see what I mean?
Alphacus PLC.
Exactly.
So you could be fired at any time.
So I can be fired at any time. I've got no real power there anymore, weirdly.
But that's why you've been trying out these more expansive anecdotes. For example, the falafel anecdote on this podcast. Because you're going to need to start earning your money over here.
I'm going to need to start earning my keep. Yeah. And, I mean, there's an argument that I've still managed to somehow contrive it that we haven't started talking about your balloon yet.
I mean, the problem is this is putting too much weight on what really isn't much of an anecdote, to be honest. But
the bar, well, think about where the bar has been set. You know.
That's true.
We'll mainly edit it with the falafel stuff. I could do some post-falafel thoughts. Give me a falafel Q&A. But have your moment. Yeah. Go on. Tell us about it.
So, you will remember we did a live show in Bristol. I think I said this already.
Yeah.
Great the fun. Topic we talked about was hot air balloons. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the audience seemed to know everything about hot air balloons. Because it seems that Bristol is balloon crazy. Mm-hmm. It turns out the man who put hot air balloons in the bean machine that fateful eve... with a man called Paul, and Paul got in contact and said, if any of us want to go out on a hot air balloon, he would happily take us.
Yeah. And it was decided that you were most likely to survive a fall from a great height, wasn't
it? When he made that offer, I saw it as a bit of audience banter. I didn't make much of it, but it was a very real offer, wasn't it, Ben, which you very much took him up on?
I think I might have turned it into a real offer.
Okay, by then harassing him with emails.
Well, no, I didn't think about it. And then he sent a message to us about 2 weeks ago saying, I've looked at the weather forecast. There's the perfect evening coming up. Because it's all about the wind has to be basically exactly perfect.
Yes. And of course, there's nothing more dependable than weather forecasts, is there? I mean, safe as houses. Can I just for a bit of emotional backdrop to this.
Yeah.
As soon as Ben mentioned that this was actually happening, I was completely convinced that Ben was going to perish. Mm.
So basically, I thought, oh yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah, go for it. I mentioned it to both of you two, and then both of you mentioned my death within like 5 seconds.
I was shit scared when I got that. That was, I thought, this is it. Death's come calling. The dark crab that pinches us all eventually has come. He's arrived a bit sooner than I hoped.
Didn't realise Ben was going to shake hands with it so readily, but
yeah. But actually looking back, yeah, sort of fits in a way with Ben. Yeah, in fact, should have seen it coming, yeah.
And our marketing team thought that the hot air balloon death would actually, well, on balance, do us a lot of good. So it was green lit, wasn't it, from on high, by corporate.
It makes room in the beans for you to bring on someone with a bit more celebrity cachet. I assume you'd be lining people up thinking I was going to die.
We've got a good, Dave Grohl is interested.
Dave Grohl's interested. David Suchet is one I want.
Very different vibes of Dave, though.
Well, it's the two opposite
Daves.
We're
working Daves. Through the Daves.
But Letterman as well, isn't it? We've talked about Letterman.
Yeah.
But the trouble with Letterman is he insists that we have a New York skyline and a potted plant behind us, don't we? Which, and the bean machine soundtrack, the theme tune has to change to...
And there has to be a full live band at all times.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't have any jazz sycophants, so there's no... Yeah.
Yeah. And the show has to then be one of those really terrible American chat shows.
Oh, Henry, you've waded in there.
You're burning bridges.
Okay. So, let's get back to... Come on.
Let's go back
to... So, Billy, how far have we... We're still only in the sort of pre-story bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was a bit worried, actually, myself, especially once you'd both mentioned my death.
Mm.
I hadn't really...
It then hangs over.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered my own death at all. In my 38 years until you mentioned it.
Right.
And the fact that it could potentially be quite a low-impact event.
What, for the culture?
Yeah.
A quite high-impact event for my body.
Literally high-impact, but yeah, figuratively low-impact.
Yeah. Would I get on the Chortle front page? Probably not.
Well, I think
it depends
you
who's announced at all that day, doesn't it,
yeah.
Really?
I think you'd be unfortunately pushed onto the off the front page by the new bean announced front page.
It's Sue Barker.
It's David Seaman.
It's David Seaman and Sue Barker. It's double, so it's one of them talks and the other one does the hand gestures, and then we swap it around halfway through. It's a kind of improv game. They've never met each other, so we think it's going to be brilliant.
The two ways of dying I was thinking about, there were two angles, weren't there? One is...
It's all the way up or all the way down, isn't it, basically?
Well, no, it's more like...
Or all the way forwards into a cliff. No? There's loads of ways.
You know, this man... before
you could be shot. You could be shot by the balloonist.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. this guy is a stranger, right? And before he said anything else, he turned out to be a lovely, lovely man. Very nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lovely to meet you, Paul. It was great. Had a great time. But, you know, he was a stranger, essentially.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He may have taken me up and murdered me.
Yeah.
Or murdered me before we even got on the balloon.
He may have taken you up and wooed you. Mm-hmm.
And then murdered me.
And then murdered you.
Yeah.
And then eaten you in a flowery bap.
So there was that there was that element of it. But then there was also the death by him being quite bad at piloting a balloon.
Yes, that was the one I was worried about.
Yeah. Being a 1,000 feet in the air, standing on some wicker.
Yeah.
And also very close to an extremely hot fire.
Yeah, because that's why I thought that was a bigger risk than murder, because alibi-wise, it's quite difficult, which is that he's publicly offered to give you a balloon ride. Mm. He's taken you up in a balloon with witnesses.
This feels quite Jonathan Creek.
You've apparently fallen to your death, but there is also a crossbow bolt through your thorax.
Brilliant Jonathan Creek episode. It's a perfect locked basket mystery.
He must have landed on a bullet on his way down.
He might have claimed that I fell out of the basket and then he tried to shoot me with a crossbow to slow me down.
I'm picturing there's someone on the bottom shooting up with a crossbow trying to slow you down, and someone else in the balloon shooting down trying to speed you up. And you end up just in stasis, floating in the air, but just getting pummeled with crossbow bolts.
You get mid-air kebabbed.
So, Ben, when you turned up at this event, so did you at any point get what I would have got, which is a cold sweat over my body and a feeling of I shouldn't do this?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you?
Well, first of all, I messaged him saying, oh, I do want to come, but I'm a little bit worried.
Mm. Yes.
This is his message.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
That's not respectful enough for me.
I promise you'll be fine.
Yeah. What does that mean? I promise. I mean, promises. Mm-hmm. Go on.
Comma. If it reassures you, one, I've flown my kids since they were little.
And I miss them every day.
Two, I wouldn't risk hurting the person behind my two favourite podcasts. I like that. I responded to that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's gone for you. He's gone for your little Bondi ego. Your Bondi ego. Yeah.
Three, I've flown hundreds of times and no fatalities or injuries yet. Brackets. Well, there was that one time, but I was cleared of all blame in court. Winky emoji.
Very good. Mm, he's winning me over. It's quite fun stuff, isn't it? Yeah. You know what? All of this stuff is great, but essentially, it doesn't really make up for like certificates, proof, training, you know, insurance documents. Do you know what I mean? That's what I want. I don't want a bit of banter and a bit of WhatsApp and a bit of, oh, it's all fine.
When I got there, he revealed that he had a license.
Okay.
To fly. Yep.
To fly, yeah.
There was no mention of insurance.
Did you sign?
What good is insurance when you're dead? You know.
Great argument. did you sign any waivers?
No, I did wonder whether he'd make me sign a waiver.
It's weird, isn't it? On the one hand, a waiver is probably means it's a more serious organisation, but at the same time, it's not a nice moment signing the waiver, is it?
No, especially when they hand you the pen and, hang on, this isn't ink, this is blood.
and this pen is still attached to the severed hand of the previous person to sign this waiver. I'm having to hold a said severed hand. It's pretty hard to actually sign
the pen properly. Out of a death grip.
we had the same problem, Ben. To do your best, honestly.
The next guy has to sign, and it's a death grip hand with a pen with a death grip hand around the wrist of the first dead hand.
The death grip, yeah, it's death grip hands.
It's very difficult to operate the pen.
Well, what we say is, after 50 death grip hands, we just chuck the whole lot away and start again.
Just buy a new pen.
Just buy a new pen. At that point, you've got a death grip circle, which we actually glaze, and we sell people in the shop. You can use them as a death grip window. You can use them as...
decorative wreath.
For hula hooping.
Anyway, so what happens next is, I get there, it's all fine, whatever. I meet his friends, who are all very nice. I met his wife, who was lovely. And I started feeling much better about it. They seemed like they knew what they were doing.
You know what they say about the guy who was in charge of the Titanic?
Yeah.
Nice guy.
Nice guy, lovely wife.
Lovely wife.
Lovely bunch of friends.
Really nice person to meet in a
great
field.
Social support network. I'm not shy of a wink emoji.
Absolutely.
So then they start filling up the balloon with cold air to begin with, to kind of fill it up.
How do they fill it up? From what?
With a fan.
Okay.
At which point a horse turned up. I sent you a photo of the horse.
You did, yeah.
Because I thought it might be the Grim Reaper had come. It was the final horse.
You were you thinking maybe they've got me high as well? Or it's the final horse. You always thought it was going to be a crab on a blue rope, but it was a horse on a blue rope.
Yeah, you always see a final horse, don't you, in the moment.
Yeah.
It was just a bloke with a horse
who'd
come to have a look, which is fair enough.
By the way, that's never happened to me at Heathrow or any... It's never...
any of the more regulated aviation sites.
Spaces. I've never been looking out the window of an aeroplane. Oh, what's that? Oh, it's a horse. Oh,
this
why
is this guy with a horse?
Oh, so don't worry, they've just come to have a look. Oh, fine. I was right, it was the backup pilot.
It's just grazing on the runway.
Well, it was a bit weird because the guy was basically taking his horse for a walk, but I didn't think he needed to do that, did he?
You see, at this point, I start to have worries about the crowd. You know, the crowd I'm in, the crew. That like, you know what I mean? You know, the milieu. It's like if one of them would say, for example, was sort of brought out a bong at that point, you wouldn't have liked it. So for me, the horse isn't as bad as someone bringing out a bong, but it's on a spectrum.
Yeah,
right.
Or if someone's playing chess with a U, something like that, in the corner. Yeah. The field.
Yeah, exactly. It just makes me...
But and then the balloon people were saying to the horseman, the thing is, when you're using the burner on the balloon, horses in general tend to freak the fuck out.
Okay.
And we can't really have a kind of mad horse on the ground whilst we're doing this. So this was a bit
we
more...
now know, but Mike, that's why we don't see the Heathrow. We now know. Fine, that's ticked. That's why they're screened. They're screened at security.
A bit more Heathrow, this section
where
they were sort of saying you can't really have the horse here because it'll go bananas.
Yeah.
But the guy was just going like, he's fine. And it's like...
I've got a cold... Ben, honestly, Mike, I've got a cold sweat almost on your behalf. I'm if this is me in your situation, I'm so getting the cold sweats here.
And what was he basing that on with the horse? What had the horse been through that was...
Well, he had put the horse on a plane once from New Zealand to Britain.
That's not true.
It is true.
That's what, just true. Using his daughter's passport? How's he done that?
Did he say it was an emotional support horse?
Listen, if you can get it into a regular size suitcase and it's less than 20 kilograms, you can get it on.
That's why they've got those metal horse-shaped shapes at the airport. You have to put your bag in to prove that it isn't a horse or that it is a horse.
You've got to get the metal shoes off first, otherwise it makes it beep when it goes through. No, he was just saying that he had his horse, and he moved from New Zealand to Britain, and he wanted to bring his horse with him, and it said it cost him £13,000.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Wow. If I knew your situation, I'd have stored that in. I don't know what to make of it, but I need to have my wits about me to just stop thinking about New Zealand and the horse. Stop thinking about New Zealand and the horse. But then I wouldn't be able to stop thinking about it.
I'm dwelling on how they cater to the horse during the course of the flight, how they entertain the horse.
Was it sedated?
Does it have a special life jacket?
Should I be sedated?
Did it watch a movie?
Was it allowed to visit the cockpit?
I suppose if you could get the meal, chop it up and put it in the sick bag, the horse could actually have eaten out of the sick bag as a nose bag. This isn't helping me. Okay, go on.
The other thing about the horse was, I don't really go near horses very much.
No, we don't.
No, I'm a city boy, really.
Yeah.
The horse really smelled terrible. Is that what horses smell like?
if they've got the fear sweats, sure.
Yeah.
if they're on the cusp of panic,
if they're about to watch this, the 10th person die in an aviation accident this year, what kind of smell was it? What kind of bad smell was it?
Are you aware of piss?
I don't think a horse is supposed to smell of piss.
Mystery. Okay. Maybe it's that thing we talked about last time about how every beautiful thing has to have an equal and opposite.
So there's, yeah, for every beautiful Lloyd's Bank advert horse, there's a smelly old pissy horse.
Yeah. That has to be taken out, not for a walk, as it turns out, but for an airing.
Yes.
Anyway, eventually he was persuaded to take the horse away.
Okay.
Which is good.
And then two blokes turned up after that, and one of them was oddly quadrupedal and seemed to have a very, very long face, an ill-fitting coat.
And really smelled of horse piss. It turns out that basically, to take off her air balloon, there basically needs to be no wind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because basically...
It's the opposite of a ship. Opposite of a sail ship in the old days.
Basically, it needs to stand up and be relatively still for you to get in it. Because if there's a bit of wind, it starts moving around. And
okay. Mm-hmm.
And so Jesus, I can't remember how much wind there was, but it was like 5 knots or something, gusting to 11. And that was kind of, it seemed like that was kind of probably on the higher end of what's okay.
Okay.
Can I say, if it would be me, it would have been 10 knots. It would have been, I'm not getting in, I'm not getting in, I'm not getting in 10 times. is that any good?
Lovely. Lovely. Yeah.
Ben, I'm genuinely getting scared on your behalf now. Does the idea of that basket swaying around in the wind is really, really... I would have been really...
How did you feel when he said the word gusting, Henry?
I didn't like it.
Because you appeared to wince.
I really didn't like it. Ben, were you actually like quite scared? I would... In the same way that... It's not to say that you weren't trusting the guy, but in the same way that doing a parachute jump or a bungee... Presumably, like, you just get really scared.
A little bit. So basically, I was scared before I got there. When I met him, he seemed very competent.
Yeah.
And that sort of put me at rest a bit.
Okay, yeah.
His job, outside of being a balloonist, is he's like a health and safety guy.
Mm. Great to know. It's not his main job. Brilliant. So, Bet, how do you get in the basket?
They just go, get in now.
And he's like, you just do get in.
You just climb in, and it was kind of listing a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You climb over the edge. Is that not hard? Is it not like a little staircase or a ladder or something?
It's not very graceful.
You sort of tumble in.
Yeah.
Also, he's not a Parisian countess pre-revolution,
no.
is he?
No, but also true. I think, like, if you get a commercial flight, I think the balloons are slightly bigger and it's probably like a slightly different experience. This was a bit more hands-on. So there's a bit of like, get out of the way, I need to grab that thing. Okay. You know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. But inside, is it lined? Is it like a fur trim lining on it?
What do you mean, like a diner booth, something like that?
No, yeah. it's just wicker basically.
So it's just wicker on the outside, wicker on the inside.
Yeah,
wicker through and through. Okay.
Yeah, I think there's some metal inside the wicker, but it's very much wicker.
Just standing on wicker is not an experience I've ever done. For example, the idea that wicker will hold me, because normally it holds mini pies,
and perhaps some soiled trousers and yesterday's t-shirt.
Yeah, but exactly. But for it to hold a human weight, does it kind of make a little scrunchy sound?
It does, and there's a tiny bit of give in it, which I didn't really like. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh. So are you tethered? Sorry, are you tethered and then someone does a detethering from the earth?
No, there's no tethers.
There's no tethers?
Nothing's tethered to anything.
Okay.
Well, the basket's tethered to the balloon.
Yeah. So you get in, just the two of you?
Three of us. So there's me, the chap, and his wife.
Okay.
She was kind of like almost a navigator.
Okay.
Oh. She had a little iPad that showed us where we were in the world. Mm-hmm. And this is quite fun. Basically, once you're in the air, all you're doing then is trying to work out where you can land. Because there's not that many places you can land, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a bit like when you go to the theatre, all you're thinking about is when can I get out? Like, you're on it, you've made a lot of effort to be here, and now it's just like, when do we get off, please? Are there Maltesers?
And so there's a couple of things to think about. One is, you don't want to land in a field of a farmer who is known to be a bastard.
Oh, really?
Wow.
So there's an app...
Oh, that's good.
For balloonists, where that's people have logged how much of a bastard the farmer has been when they've landed.
That's amazing. That's
and
good.
Or if they're like quite nice. So basically, some of the fields are red on the app. Wow. And that means like...
There's just someone down there with a shotgun, just go and make my day kind of guy.
Is there a special sign for Clarkson? What would you get for him?
I'd not consider this, but basically, when you land in someone's field... It's often because you just had to, because that was a place you could land. And you haven't got much control of where you're going, really. Just up and down. So there's a car following you on the ground.
Yeah.
Not just like a Range Rover, not coursing through back gardens and...
Hedges.
And kitchen diners.
So they're on the road.
Yeah.
And then they get to the wherever you landed. And basically the first job is to charm the farmer. So they've got like bottles of champagne in the car. And basically, they sort of ply the farmer with
That's
gifts.
That's so funny.
And then the farmer will open the gate and let you drive your Range Rover in and go and get the balloon.
And where did you land in the end? Friendly farmer?
Very friendly farmer. But yeah, so she's the navigator. She's looking out for bastard farmers. She's also looking out for fields with animals in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So spook them.
Little fact I got.
Mm-hmm.
The worst animals in terms of spooking animals is pigs and sheep.
Right.
Pigs, because they can't look up physically, have no idea what's going on and sort of freak out because they just hear noise, but they can't see
it. They don't look up?
No.
I used to know that fact.
Sheep are particularly bad, they said, because they will just start running. And if one sheep runs, the rest run. And they just run without too much thought and will sometimes like run into a quarry.
A bit like Londoners at a falafel stall. Isn't it? They'll just follow the herd.
Yeah.
Oh, finally, all comes full circle. Great. End of the episode. Thank you. They'll run into a quarry.
Yeah, or a road.
And they won't take up the tools and start trying to re-quarry it, will they?
Not without a license, no.
Try getting one of those if you're a sheep.
So, Ben, what you're saying is which animals are scared of balloons, and you've said sheep and
pigs.
Pigs.
Sheep and
what
pigs.
You're saying is two out of the three animals.
Sorry?
In UK. Two out of three UK farm animals. What else is there?
Chickens.
Okay, fine. Chickens as well. Two out of four. Half of UK farm animals are afraid of balloons, is what you're saying.
I think they're all slightly afraid of balloons.
Pigs, sheep. Because what else is there? There's a chickens and cows, right? That's it.
We might have a llama.
Farmed salmon.
And it's very hard to do a vox pop of a farmed salmon, isn't it? So it's very hard to know how they feel about balloons.
Anyway, great experience.
Ben, I want to know more about... once you get up, you've basically skirted over the journey a bit. Was it just like pop your AirPods in, watch the Lego movie? What was it? So once you're up there, Ben, how high did you get?
Good question.
I think...
You can use horse... you can use the horse
horsepower.
You can use...
Double-decker buses.
What's the kind of knot? Was there any language? Like, how do they measure things? Is it knots?
Knots is speed.
Knots is speed. Height is feet?
Feet.
Yards?
Yeah. Feet. I think we got to about 1,500 feet.
Decent.
And he said that his balloon can get to 10,000 feet.
So, to help me out from a London perspective, how many Pret a Manger hoisin duck wraps would that be on top of each other? What is that in terms of how high is that in a building? What, 1,500 feet? Well, that sounds quite high to me.
I think that's about 2,500 hoisin duck wraps.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
In one day. I don't have to eat all of them. Oh, God, I was panicking.
So the shard, I'm looking up, the shard is about 1,000 feet. So maybe a shard. Shard and a half, maybe?
Yeah, so when you were up high, were you, what was the feeling? Were you scared? Were you just enjoying it at that point? Was there any adrenaline left?
Once you got going, you just feel very relaxed. And it's there's no wind. You don't feel any wind because you're moving with the wind. So there's no buffeting. It's all very smooth. And then, basically, when we were up there, they hadn't mentioned this until we were up there, really. He said, when we land, there's about a 50% chance that the basket tips over and we all sort of fall on each other.
And just go with it. If you want, just whatever feels right
slipping
in that moment.
In the sliding champagnes all over the place.
Yeah.
Fresh cut strawberries.
Yeah, the guy with the piss smelling horse's back. Just go with it.
You only live once, Ben. You only live once. Come on.
They were just making me prepared for the fact that if the landing isn't smooth, we all end up in a pile.
Okay.
And they sort of told me how to hold on, which way to face, and so that my arms and legs don't break, and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
This is a hot air balloon of brace, brace, brace. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But as it happened, he landed. I mean, he was an amazing pilot. His control of it was incredible. And we landed just like a perfect, like, just imagine kissing the ground, stop. Like, no, it was amazing.
Wow.
I was really impressed.
That does sound very good.
It was a very good experience.
I wish I'd gone on it now. But at the same time, I don't want to go on in the future because I think the next bean, it must be that the next bean in a balloon is
he did offer.
Is the doomed one.
He said to extend the offer to you too.
Maybe. Yeah. Mike, would you do it? I don't know.
I love the idea of it, yeah. I'm a bit more sold. Yeah, now that Ben has mentioned it, I couldn't go that day. I do find it appealing.
I can't guarantee the horse will be there the second time. So in conclusion, I had a great time. Thank you, Paul. Had a great time.
A great time and a great topic.
Really good topic. Thanks, Ben, from where was it? Cardiff.
Cardiff. Okay, time to read your emails. Before I play the email jingle, I've had an email from Helen, Elliot and Bronte. So this email's from Helen. She says, my 4 and 8-year-old daughters now sing all the songs, including the swears. I thank you. But this was too cute not to send. I hope you like it. And forever, the email jingle will be a robot chewing a hort. Let's listen to this.
Like a robot chewing a hort.
Very cute.
Very lovely.
Nice. Thank you for that.
Very, very lovely.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress.
Like a robot chewing a hook.
Give me your hoof.
My beautiful horse.
Okay, let's read your emails. If you'd like to email us, send them to 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Ash in Australia. Hi, Beans. I couldn't help but write to you after your most recent episode, brackets feudalism, as I work at a chef in a gourmet Japanese restaurant here in Australia. I was listening as I was preparing not only a bucket of eels, but also sea urchins.
Ooh.
Oh.
Blimey.
Wow. I'm not rushing to that restaurant, I've got to say, I'll be honest.
Is that one of those dishes where you're playing a game, you're rolling the dice with death himself?
Oh, could be, yeah. It's a high status move. It's kind of like a...
like 80s businessman real...
Yeah.
That move.
Or sort of Bond villain.
Yeah. Well, he writes, as Henry mentioned, the classic Newtonian principle of all things having their equal and opposite parts, we serve uni, which is basically the inside of a sea urchin. And if I may say, it is delicious. And I even got to plate some up whilst listening to the pod. I asked my boss if we could offer a Pompidou discount, and he told me to get fucked.
That's how you run a tight restaurant, though, isn't it? You're in the kitchen. You don't have time for that kind of shit. I've got 50 covers here. And you're asking me about Pompa what? Get fucked.
Joe writes, this is a bollocking for me. Had a few of these, not quite ubiquibolic level, but a few.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
The neighbours viewers have been in touch.
Because I mentioned Cody, is it?
Cody, I mentioned the death of the character Cody Willis last week.
At a duck protest.
Hang on, I've got a thought about this.
Okay. What's this? Is this a preemptor bollock?
You're trying to muscle in on someone else's bollock.
Was she shot, but not during a duck hunt?
Correct.
Thank you. I think she was shot in Ramsey Street itself during a classic police raid.
Correct.
Peeking out of the window.
She was caught in the crossfire of a police shootout with local drug dealers.
Hmm.
It was Kerry Bishop who was shot by a duck hunter. Best wishes, Joe.
Okay.
That has been haunting me since the last recording.
So there was like a drugs cop. Did it all go a bit sort of top boy at a point, Neighbours? I don't remember that.
I did watch that episode and I remember being her being discovered on the floor by the sofa because a stray bullet had come through the window and killed her dead. I don't remember why there was a drugs / police shootout in the cul-de-sac in the first place. I have a feeling that might have been brushed over a little bit.
Wasn't it Harold Bishop was bringing in 1,000 kilograms of cocaine?
That's right.
And he got himself an AK. And
and there was that really disturbing scene where he gets so addicted to it, he actually snorts it through a didgeridoo. That's how much he's putting away.
which was very much for the British audiences.
Yeah.
Did receive some criticism.
Harold's gurning again. By the way, there now follows a make your own three bean salad funny bit where we just supply the main parts and then the audience, because everyone's got editing software now, everyone's got iPhones, everyone can do this at home.
Right.
Yep. So we just give you the constituent parts of what we would normally do in this situation. Mm-hmm. So it's things like, oh, mate, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Prawns, yep. Prawns. Get out of it. Wow. Any other things to add in?
Harold's alive.
Not bad.
Take that, you pig motherfuckers. Madge, I need more ammo. Tony, where are the grenades? They've shot the barbecue. No! I said I wanted a medium rare panini, not a well done panini. I'm that big now, I use the set of Neighbours as my green room when I'm filming separate films. Yeah. It's like, fucking deal with it. You don't like me being here? Deal with it, yeah? I'm Russell frickin' Crowe. You also need to switch out some swears to be pre-Watershed. For example, they had the phrase, the phrase obviously back off was felt to be too strong, so they changed it to rack off.
Rack off, Charlene.
Yeah. So you could also have rack off if you want to go stronger. Race off. You ranker.
You mother racker. Yeah, I've been racking your wife. I've also been racking your sister. Yeah. Rack this. You're racked enough now.
For those who might be abroad who don't know what we're talking about, Neighbours is a soap opera set in Australia.
Whatever.
I always remember in Neighbours, I always used to laugh because when they fancied someone, they'd be like, he's a total spank.
Yeah.
Fellow beans, I was listening, as I often do, with lukewarm delight to the game shows episode when Henry mentioned in passing that he did jury duty. No one questioned this. For the last 24 hours, all I can think about is the judge looking over to the jury each day, wondering why one of the jurors was an hour late, yet arriving with a Pret coffee and pastries, doodling random pictures and asking the person next to them again and again what was going on. Imagine if you, Ben or Mike, was falsely accused of murder. The lawyer sitting next to you says you have a strong case, but as long as we can get the jury to pay attention long enough, you should be home free. And then you look over to the jury and see Henry.
Can I say, I literally didn't concentrate during that, what that line was. I don't know what that meant. I was thinking about something else.
I know you can't talk about the particulars of the case, but what was being on a jury like, Henry, from Ben, from King's Cross?
Well, it was pretty intense. One thing I will say about the cases and about the jury experience is that I ended up
pleading guilty.
I had to, because what are the chances? But I had actually done it. They had completely the wrong end of the stick, and it was actually me that had done it, which is very rare that happens. So I did a full confession, but basically the only thing I can tell you is guilty. And not just, and I can tell you, if anyone here has a worry about the judicial system and that justice doesn't get done, I knew he was guilty before anyone even opened their mouth. So rest assured, rest easy. He just had that look about him.
If you want more Three Bean Salad, why not go to patreon.com/threebeansalad, where we put on our bonus episodes. Recently, we put up an episode of Film Corner, our film review podcast about the film and the Paris.
There was also a Henry anecdote special, wasn't there?
There was, called Henry Packer, What I Did on My Holidays.
Mm-hmm. Heads up about live gigs, that kind of stuff.
Well, you get the first option to get tickets for live gigs, don't you?
Patreon.com/3beansalad. There are various tiers to sign up at. If you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Uh-oh.
It was Bring Your Favourite Optician night, wasn't it?
It was indeed. Thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
It's well known that this summer Marvel Studios will commit their newest creation to film. The Spectacle, as he is rumoured to be known, is a superhero with the power to dispense well-fitting contact lenses without the aid of a keratometer. What is not known publicly, but has been an open secret in the Sean Bean Lounge, is that for the past 5 years, Daniel Day-Lewis hasn't been retired at all, but has been training for the role by working at Sean Bean's Folly Specsavers on the Sean Bean Folly High Street of the Sean Bean Lounge. And unsurprisingly, he's bloody good at it. Perhaps with hindsight, declaring last night, Bring Your Favourite Optician Night wasn't going to be the safe low-key event Sean Bean had hoped for. Daniel Day-Lewis clocked off from his Specsavers shift to find a baying mob waiting for him outside, all demanding to have him as their plus one to the Bean Lounge shindig. Hayley Belenis was the first to physically lay hands on the treasured actor. This prompted a rush, and soon Daniel Day-Lewis had disappeared under a pile of Rachel Clements, Jill Beaton, Max Colthurst, and Dave Prosser. He was yanked free from under the pile by Hazel Rose, who strong-armed him back into the Specsavers and locked the door. This incensed the remaining rabble, who launched George Wardley at the plate glass shop window to break in. To their frustration, George reflexively spread his limbs out like the toe pads of a tree frog, causing him to simply bounce off, and he had to be thrown a further 17 times before the glass finally weakened and smashed. Simon Moriarty, Charlotte Pritchard, and Dan Catchpole looted the shop of its tinted prescription sunglasses, while the rest of the horde swept in after the real prize of the night. Just when it looked as if things couldn't get any worse, Emily Bunting was seen gripping an ear between blood-stained teeth, and Daniel Day-Lewis appeared to be missing an ear. A howl went up, and some kind of hive-brain consensus seemed to have been inspired by this sight among the throng. Before Daniel Day-Lewis even had a chance to spend 5 years researching the life of a former Eastern Bloc intelligence officer for a hypothetical movie role, have a cyanide tooth installed and bite into it, he was seized upon by a swarm of hands and torn to pieces. Phil Griffiths took his hair, Ben Golding took his dominant hand, Kelly Williams took his spleen, and James Parker took his back. Barney Dufton, the left kidney, Ross Gilby, one gizzard, and Duncan Rawlings, the award-winning left foot. Dan Thistlethwaite took 4 toenails, and Bradley Uvagesh took a dimple, while Phil Askew and Edward Davies both made off with a handful of pubes. Charlie Roberts, Andrew C, and Tom Knight Gaynor teamed up as a mini-mob and shared the lap. Father and son team William and Ben Jones claimed a buttock each and have already been signed up by the UK's premier showbiz agency to tour the nation's theatres with a two-man buttock escapology show to be directed by Trevor Nunn. Little Dennis Popcorn took a blemish, Dan Richards some miscellaneous offal, James Smith the liquid components of Daniel Day-Lewis, CS took an armpit, and Scott Aitken a leg bit. Will Reimer came out of the melee with 3 knees and has referred himself to the Bean Lounge Standards Authority. Overall, it was felt that the carnage had been extremely cathartic, and what followed was a wonderfully pleasant and sedate evening with mocktails, nibbles, and, at the suggestion of Mark the Undertaker Burger, Season 9 of Vanderpump Rules. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the show. We'll finish with a version of our theme tune, sent in by Maxwell from South New Brighton, Christchurch, New Zealand.
Wow. Thank you, Maxwell.
Maybe not far from Diamond Harbour itself. He says, I produce dance music, so I've written a thumping dubstep rendition of your theme in a minor key. You'll have to imagine this being blasted out of a huge substack in a grimy nightclub, a place I'm sure the Beans visit on the regular.
That's the Bean scene.
That's the Bean scene.
All right, well, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, bye.